All right, we are up and going. Zach Ullman, how the heck are you today, sir?
Blessed and highly favored.
Excellent. I love to hear that kind of stuff. So your industry is real estate investing, which is, I would say, not very common, but I would also say it's become a little bit more prevalent here recently. How did you get into that?
Yeah, so I got into it. My background was financial consulting. I pretty much can value anything that creates a cash flow. And, you know, I was working in corporate America, thought I was going to get rich, became very successful in it. And I was still, you know, not living the lifestyle I wanted. So I came down to a local real estate investing group, and I saw a 22-year-old young man making $10,000 a month traveling the world. And I said, hey, maybe there's a different way. And I just started hanging around other people that were doing it and just got busy and fully committed. That's the biggest thing, fully committed to living, having that life, and just never gave up. And it took me about a year and a half to do my first deal. And I just, ever since then, man, you know, going full steam ahead.
Okay. So what prompted you, or were you already kind of considering real estate investing as something that you might do in the future? Or what made you decide to go to that meetup?
I wanted to make money. I wanted to buy a bit. I was making six figures in my job, and I had every benefit you could think of. But, you know, I wasn't bringing that home that much after taxes. I was a single guy living in Chicago. So I wanted to start my own business or buy a business, and I couldn't get any capital. Or let me rephrase it. I didn't know how to get access to capital. And I saw real estate investors. They, you know, it was really easy to get access to money. So I just started down that road, because in real estate, if you got a good deal, they don't care about your income. They don't care about your credit. They don't care. You know, they're lending on the asset. So that's the reason I decided to go down real estate. And then I really got educated about it and saw all the benefits of it, and just fell in love with the concept, the industry, the strategies. And yeah, that's how I got started.
Okay. And then what was the group that you were involved in when you were in Chicago? Was it just like a regular meetup, or was it a certain organization?
Yeah, it was. I went to a bunch of them. You know, I went to some free ones. I went to all different types of them. But I ended up at one. You know, it did cost money. It was, at the time, $15,000 to join, but it came with an education program, and they met every week and every Thursday and every other Saturday in person. And that was huge for me. The education that was based around was Renatus, and that's who I'm still involved with today. Cause I'm constantly taking their classes and, you know, just constantly learning new strategies, and not only around real estate, but around wealth.
Okay, so this group, Renatus, they're not just involved in real estate investing. They're also basically encouraging people to build the life that they want to live through their education system. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, so they teach you how to invest in real estate, every type of real estate investing you can think of. But they also talk about tax strategies, what, you know, velocity banking, infinite banking, 1031 exchanges, life insurance policies, cost segregation, small business payroll. I mean, you name it. And, you know, they have a class on it, and it's really great, because there's a lot of people that know how to make money, but, you know, setting yourself up for long-term residual income is the goal, at least for me. So I can be traveling and collecting checks.
Yes.
More you can keep and, you know, reinvest back into it. We just started implementing what's called the infinite banking concept, and it's how to use life insurance policies to actually become the bank. And it's a fascinating strategy.
That is interesting. Yeah, because, you know, the way that you and I met was actually through a meetup, and then I became involved with Renatus. But I've had to kind of take a little bit of a break because of my situation. But the infinite banking thing, that sounds like a new development, because I haven't heard of that one yet.
Yeah, it's been around. Nelson Nash actually is the one that really made it famous. the Rockefellers, the family of the Rockefellers, that's how they grow and maintain their wealth. So the concept has been around for a long time. We started a class on it maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It's inside the curriculum. It's known as wealth acceleration. So there's a couple different terms for it. So,
okay. That might've been the reason I didn't see it, because I might've seen it under the wealth acceleration and not just, the infinite banking with what you just said. So
yeah,
it's probably in there somewhere. Cause I know there's just a wealth of information within that learning module.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thinking back to how you got involved with, you know, real estate investing and with Renatus, for somebody that is actually thinking about getting into real estate at this point in time, how would you suggest that they do that? Would you suggest they look up Renatus and see if they have a chapter, or just go like to meetups, or how would you suggest people start that process?
You know, it all really depends on how serious they are. If they're committed to it, I tell them to actually join Renatus, spend the money. You know, if they just want to go and check it out and see if it's something they want to do, go find someone local and go find a local meeting, go find a local thing, a meetup or a Facebook group or something, and just see, if it's something that you're interested in. And then once you're interested, I would say, Renatus has the best education around. We get people, we have 200 to 300 people a week that come out of our office. We have a local office here in Phoenix, Arizona. And most of them, the only other option is, YouTube, Google, maybe a book. But the big options that people have are guru seminars. And what I classify as a guru seminar is it's someone that comes into town on a Friday and leaves on a Sunday and tries to sell you a $40,000 to $60,000 package. And the challenge around that is, as we see it all the time, is they're not left with any local help. And, they can get someone to come out, but it's going to cost them $20,000 to $40,000 to send a local coach out for a week or two. And, it's a lot to learn in a week. And, we love our model. We think it's the best. Are we biased? Yeah, because it's ours. But, I would tell them to check it out. Any event you go to, leave your credit card at home and just get a good feel of the people running it and a good feel of the value that you're going to get from it.
I actually went to a walkthrough when I first became aware of your meetup. I went to a walkthrough and listened to a guy speak, and he basically told the story that you just told about the guru seminars and how they're set up and what they do and the disadvantages of, what happens after they leave town. Right. And I thought to myself, okay, all right, well, I've never experienced that, but that sounds like a less than ideal setup. And I actually went to one of those seminars about a couple weeks after I went through the walkthrough. And I'll be damned if it wasn't exactly what that guy said. Here's the stuff, we give you just a little tidbit of information in the class, but if you want more, I think it was like $1,200 for the next weekend or something. And,
yep.
And I would have totally expected, if I would have gone, to have that, $20,000 expected bill at the end of that. And that's a big reason why I decided to go with Renatus, is because it's local and because you told me how it was.
Right.
I had to see it for myself, because when it comes to, investing and things like that, I'm fairly skeptical. But once I saw it for myself and that you guys were shooting it straight, I'm like, okay, well, I know where I'm going now, because these guys are here, they're doing it, and they didn't feed me any BS.
Yeah. And, we're just straight with people. We don't close at any of our meetings. We share information, and for those, the people that want it, they join, and the people that don't, they learn something, and, they go home with some knowledge. And, I look at it like this: the people that join our group, we invest our time, energy, and resources into them. So, we don't want to sell anybody. We want people that are excited to join, that are excited to come to the weekly meetings, that are excited to, transform their life. and actually take direction, take coaching. So, you know, we deal with them on a daily basis. So we want to make sure we like them, right? We just don't want to sell them and, you know, put them into a program.
It's all about finding your tribe, building your community, which is a core foundation of any good business. You want to surround yourself with like-minded people that are heading in the same direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so I want to move into kind of the actual market here for a second, because when I moved out into the Valley, it was 2008, and it was right as, you know, the crash and the recession was happening and everything was going to hell in a handbasket, so to speak. And it's been a few years now, obviously. Where would you say that the market is now, and what have you, have you seen an increasing trend as far as like prices and profitability and things like that?
Prices, it's what would be classified as a seller's market. Prices are on the rise, and we have more and more big institutional players coming in. Zillow is actually starting to buy properties. Zillow.com is getting into the home flipping business. We have big buyers out here in Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona market, Open Door, and I can't think of the other one, but they're big institutional buyers. We got other hedge funds that are buying 800 to 900 properties a year. So they're happy with 6, 9, 10% returns on their money. And what we've seen is, you know, people are just outbidding each other. And are there still deals? Absolutely. You know, we still have deals that we're making six figures on. But are they harder to find? Absolutely. You really got to know how to look. It sort of weeds the amateurs out. So it's, you know, we're still making money, and as things go, we just change strategy. So we're doing a lot of seller financing subject to purchases, because we don't know when things are going to slow down or turn around. I was just reading some stuff from Fannie Mae right before I hopped on, and their forecast is, you know, things aren't as rainbows and sunshines as everyone thinks. However, Phoenix is its own market, and they have, I think, 250 people a day moving in from, you know, California outside markets, because it is such a great place to live. You know, we've had cities here in the Valley that are voted the best place to live in America. So that's, you know, it's, you have to look at it nationally, and then you also look at it by region. And there's markets that are already starting to face a downturn. Florida, I think Illinois, definitely. I have owned properties in Illinois. So there's places that are already facing that downturn. And, you know, out here in Arizona, prices are still on the climb. Anything below $300,000, $350,000 is, you know, they're getting multiple offers day of, and getting more than listing price. You know, you get above the all the inventory is in the higher price points, 500, 500, 600, you know, in the $1 million price point. So, you know, if for the experienced people, you know, they, a lot of them are still going, and, you know, some of them are pulling back. For the inexperienced people, you know, I would say maybe, you know, get educated, definitely get educated before you get out there. Phoenix itself has a lot of very sophisticated investors, has a lot of very sophisticated money. And it also has a lot of not so smart money. I see people risking $300,000 to $400,000 to make 10 to 20 grand. And that, to me, that's, you know, that's a little bit silly, but, you know, they're willing to do it.
So with Zillow and Open Door and the other people that are coming into the Valley, you said they're happy with the 8 to 10% returns. What do you guys generally look for, or what do you look for when you're evaluating a property? What should that percentage of return be, do you think, for it to be like worth your time?
Well, it really all depends. And what I mean by that is I like doing most of my deals with none of my own money. So you can't really calculate a return if you don't have anything into it. But it depends on really what property, what type of deal you're doing. If I'm doing wholesaling, you know, it depends on how much time I put in it. I want to make at least 5 to 10 grand. If I'm flipping, I want to at least make 10% of the ARV, if not 15 to 20. And what I mean by that is if your house is worth 300, I want to at least be making $30,000 on that. Now I'll borrow all of that money, or I'll partner with people to make that. And that's on the bottom end of it. And, you know, we have people in our group, they just sold a house for like 750,000, or it's on the market for 750,000. They're going to make like $120,000 on it. I did another deal. Somebody in our group, they bought a house. It was a short sale. So they owed 130. They negotiated it down to 72. They put about 30 into it and they sold it for 180. And, you know, after all the bells and whistles and expenses, they made about $45,000-$50,000 on a $180,000 house. So that's a huge profit. I was just talking to a friend of mine. He made $17,500 on a wholesale. And this is recently, as of, you know, in the last couple of weeks, months. So they're still out there. Now, you know, everyone has a different risk parameter. I on rental properties, I don't like having rental properties if they're not making at least $400 of cash flow a month. So on the great thing about rentals is if people really understand a rental, most people only focus on the cash flow. That's the cash on cash return. But what they don't look at is they don't look at the depreciation benefit, the appreciation benefit, meaning the price increase of the house, or the amortization effect, which means that your tenant is effectively paying off your mortgage. So there's four quadrants that you really get a return in, and it's very easily, you know, easily is, I guess you could say, based on who's saying it, get 100% return on your money on a rental property. So, you know, it depends on your strategy and depending on your risk factor. But I tell people, you know, be careful of hard money right now. Short-term, high-interest loans, that's what we've referred to as hard money. We love doing seller financing, subject to deals, because we're getting them on 30-year mortgages. I just looked at a couple of my mortgages, and they were at 3.5%. So if the market turns, you know, if we're going to fix and flip it and the market turns, we can turn into a buy and hold, a short-term rental, contract for deed, lease options, all these different exit strategies.
When you structure it, when you write up the contract, you first intend obviously to do the fix and flip, but you can write it in as, you know, if things happen, we might turn it into, like you said, we might turn it into a rental property, or we might fix it and hold it for a little bit. And that's all things that can be discussed and with the seller, if you're doing that seller financing, right?
Yeah. So your real seller financing subject to is the method I really like. We've done our last couple fix and flips on that. And essentially the deed goes into our name, the mortgage stays in their name. Now we do a lot of those on pre-foreclosures, and you know, you really got to understand how to do them, because done incorrectly, you can put yourself at risk by not having the paperwork done correctly. And you also got to make the seller aware of the implications of that, you know, that the debt is still going to be in their name. So, you know, fully disclose everything and let them know. But yeah, it's all done on the purchase contract. So when you start investing in real estate, there's a lot of concepts out there that, you know, we talk about lease options and contract for deed and subject to and land contracts and all these seller financing terms. And, you know, they're similar, but they have different ramifications, legal ramifications, and the paperwork has to be done, you know, is different. And that's a big thing. And if you ever bought a house, you understand there's a lot of paperwork. And if done incorrectly, you know, we've used title companies before on subject twos. And when we went to sell it, we bought it on a subject two, and we went to sell it, we had to track down the buyer because the title company didn't do everything on the front end and we couldn't sell it on the back end. So it's very important that you're working with the right people, because we were luckily able to track the sellers down that we bought it from, you know, and get them to sign the paperwork so we could sell it to a different person on the back end. But, you know, I would have hated to see what it looked like if we didn't.
And that was the fault of the title company you were working with at the time, that they just missed something?
Yeah, it was a one-page document. I forget what it was called, but it was a one-page document. And, you know, luckily we treat the people we buy our houses from, we treat them very good. So we maintain that relationship with them. So they, you know, they answered their phone and they said, absolutely, no problem, we'll be in and sign it right away. Didn't ask for any money or anything. That's a huge, huge thing to understand for everyone new. You know, if you're experienced, you probably already understand this, but treat the people with respect and dignity and just take care of them. Now you're in this to make money, but you can also make a difference, right? A lot of the people we're dealing with is they have challenges, and if we can solve their problems, you know, we can be a huge, huge impact of good impact in their life. But there's also the opportunity to treat them poorly, and, you know, it'll come around and bite you in the butt. Cause there's people here all over the country, you know, here too in the Valley, that are not ethical, and they take advantage of people. And, you know, it's a small industry, so it comes around.
I can see that being more isolated, you know, the investor community being more isolated and like you said, a small world. And yeah, in those types of worlds, the word gets around fast if you're not treating people, like you said, with respect and dignity and actually building a good relationship. So yeah, it was definitely good that those people came through for you and that you set up that relationship correctly in the beginning, just by being the upfront business person that you need to be in order to, you know, to be successful with this. And then thinking about getting into this process, it really sounds to me like, especially right now with the way the market is and even, you know, going forward, just because of all the, like you said, the legal ramifications and paperwork, it really would be best for somebody considering this to get involved with a group or to get involved with somebody that is doing this and has been doing this for a while, because there's a lot of really detrimental mistakes you could make.
Yeah. The biggest thing is you want to find somebody that's local in your market, a group that's local. You know, if you're in Phoenix, come check us out, or, you know, Maricopa County, Arizona, come check us out. I think we have the best thing out there. But, you know, for people in the other industry or other geographical areas, you know, go and find someone local. These people that are going to these guru seminars that are paying $20,000, $40,000, $60,000 for the education, they're telling them inside of the education to go find local people. So save your money on them and go find someone local and, you know, check them out. Go to their events, feel them out, see who's doing deals, if they're actually legit. Look them up on the internet, you know, and do your due diligence. Because it's very easy to, you know, get wrapped up and spend some money with a place that may not align with where you want to go.
So if you've got probably, I would say maybe like 10 grand or less to invest into like getting into real estate, where would you suggest somebody start? Should they start like doing fix and flips like everybody sees on TV?
I would say, man, if I had 10 grand and I had to start over again, like, it depends. If I have my knowledge, you know, I can do it with no money. If you don't have any money, you got to acquire the knowledge. I'm sorry, if you don't have any experience or the knowledge, you got to acquire that knowledge, because 10 grand is nothing in the world of real estate. I mean, out here in Arizona, I mean, 10 grand isn't going to get you anywhere, you know. Unless you understand, unless you have the knowledge, right? And then if you have the knowledge, you can make it work. So it depends on where you're at. If you have no knowledge and you got 10 grand and you're just looking for someone else to invest it, there's plenty of places to go. And, you know, here's the challenge around it with that small amount of money is, the people I deal with, we're dealing with hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you got to be careful how you raise money. So if you can lend money or you can partner with people, but the I word, we hear, you know, investor, it has several different meanings. But if you're an investor with, and you're going to invest in somebody's property, there's some gray areas around SEC, Securities Exchange Commissions, that the investor, that the real estate investor could get in trouble because they're raising money without a license. So if someone came to me and said, hey, I have 10 grand, I want to learn how to invest, I would say, join our group. That's what I would tell them. Now, if they said, hey, Zach, I have 10 grand, I want to, I'm happy with 6 to 10% return, I would tell them to go look at there's plenty of, we're getting ready to start one ourselves where people pool the money, crowdfunding. So you can use crowdfunding and invest as little as $1,000, I think, $1,500, $2,000. And, you know, they're getting 6 to 8 to 10%, sometimes 12% returns out there, depending on what they're investing in and depending on the style. So if you want to be more of a passive investor with that little amount of money, that's a great strategy. Obviously, you know, the stock market, you can buy in ETFs and different mutual funds that invest in real estate. So again, it really all depends on how much time you want to put into it and how much control you want to have over it. The more control you want to have over it, the more educated you need to be. Definitely.
Your suggestion would be then, if they have that little amount of money and no knowledge, go get the education first, because then you'll realize how to not only get into deals and do them properly, but you won't necessarily have to invest your own money in the future.
Now, yeah, I want to preface that. If they want to become an investor themselves.
Right.
If they love their job and they have no interest in real estate investing, you know, then I would say, hey, go to the crowdfunding places, go to, the places, there's ETFs, things like that, where you can invest in real estate through a professional manner. I would say, be very cautious if you don't know what you're doing about lending on private deals, because I see people all the time that lose money because they don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand how to collateralize it, how to secure it. They don't understand if the person if it's a good deal or a bad deal, and they may not know the person. And I see people all the time that get ripped off.
You've seen somebody invest their money to a deal, like to fix it and flip a house or whatever. You've seen somebody invest their money to do a deal like that with somebody they didn't even know?
Oh yeah. So I met a girl. She's a grown woman that invested. She went to a guru seminar and found a guy. You know, everyone's excited. They bought into the program. They went into the, you know, whatever the training was. You know, they're getting excited. She went and raised $160,000 of her family's money, invested it in two deals, and lost it all because she didn't have one piece of paper signed. The guy, she didn't know the guy. He later was indicted by the attorney general because he was preying upon, you know, newbies. And it wasn't just her. But the houses got foreclosed on, and she didn't have a deed of trust. So she had the promissory note, but no deed of trust. And I see people lend all the time with a promissory note. So the promissory note is the terms of the agreement, you know, how much I'm lending, who I'm lending it to, when's it due by, the interest rate. And then the mortgage or the deed of trust, depending on what state you're in, is the piece of paper that collateralizes the note to the house. And she didn't have a deed of trust. And, it foreclosed and she lost it all. Yeah, we tell people you're going to get educated one way or another, right? You either pay out in the field, or you pay, a program one way or another.
Yeah. Wow. That's insane. Me personally, I would never, like, I'm never giving a stranger my money. Like, I don't care how good you say your return is going to be. I don't know you. You're not getting $100,000 of my money. That's not happening. Wow.
People do it every day. People do. Think about it. in our world, people every day, they don't know their financial brokers. They don't know their accountants. They don't know their professionals. I talked to a couple the other day, and they're in their 80s, and they gave all their money to a financial advisor, and he lost it all. And then he skipped town. And, you know, it happens every day. And I think one of the big things that we lack here in the United States is education around finances, education around money, education around buying your own home. You know, we and debt and understanding debt and credit cards and, you know, just a simple personal finances. And, you know, there's a lot of professionals, you know, I say that quote unquote professionals out there giving financial advice. And from a pure mathematics, from a pure number standpoint, it's not the best way. From a risk standpoint and from a pure metrics return standpoint as well.
There is definitely a lack of education around money and finances. I don't know, you know, around the world, but I know in the US that's 100% accurate. And there's been an increased conversation that I've seen on my, you know, social feeds that I watch about, you know, people rumbling about instituting a program or a class, like when kids get into middle school or high school, just about like basic finances, like how to have a bank account, how to make sure that it stays in balance, and how to budget and save, things like that. And that's, yeah, it's missing from our society, and it would be a great thing to have.
Yeah. And then we're told to, you know, let other people control our finances. And, you know, we're, a lot of the stuff we're told is not the best thing for us. You know, I was told that I wanted to become rich and, you know, wealthy. And I was told to go to school, get a job and, you know, play that game. And that didn't work.
Right.
But I tried, you know, I played the game until I realized for myself that it wasn't going to take me where I wanted to go.
And a lot of people get that same talk, and it stems just from generations. That's just how it's done. You know, that's how I was told. That's what I did. So that's what you should do. And we're not living in those times anymore. You know, we've got this great thing now called the internet that has allowed more people to create wealth than ever before, whether you've got a college degree or not. And yeah, just times have changed then, and the advice needs to change too. Ugh.
Very much so.
I want to harken back to your thing about, like, you're either going to learn the lesson before with education, or you're going to learn it after when things go to crap.
Right.
So what lessons have you learned after you've got the education that would be good to know going forward for somebody that is already in this world or thinking about getting into it? Like, what are those other little, I guess you could say, real world experiences that you've had?
You know, being around people that are of good integrity and good character is huge. And, you know, that's something just all around in the world of business. But for me, here's one thing I learned specifically around, you know, like a practical application, is you got to understand how to finance a property. So there's so many ways to finance real estate, and people think financing the property and finding the property. Now, there's a lot of wholesalers out here in Arizona, and what they do is it's called daisy chaining, or, you know, they mail out their, you know, someone else's property, and they mark it up $5,000, $10,000, a couple thousand dollars. So that's something that happens out here. But to really find a deal, like direct to seller, it takes a skill set. And if you can gain that skill set, you can make a lot of money, because there's, you know, there's not a lot of people do that, know how to do that. They cherry pick from other people's deals. And then once you find a deal, is learning how to finance it. So there's a lot of people that we talk to that other people, I guess, skipped over, because they didn't know how to make the deal a deal. Most people out there know traditional fix and flips, which is using hard money or a realtor, then wholesaling, you know, traditional wholesaling, you find a buyer and a seller and you put them together and you collect a fee. And then, you know, your traditional rentals where you find somebody and then selling their house, you buy it on a 30-year mortgage, you go to the bank and go that process. But there's so many other strategies that can maximize the returns. You know, a big thing out here right now is short-term rentals. We're doing, there's lease options, there's contract for deeds, there's tax liens, there's notes, there's commercial, there's land development, there's building homes. There's this plethora of others. You know, I talked about subject to earlier, a contract for deed. There's a plethora of other strategies that can help you make money on properties that everyone else overlook. To give you an example is I just bought a house at retail and the guy was going through foreclosure. It had very little equity in it. So all the traditional fix and flippers and all the traditional wholesalers passed it up because they didn't know what to do with it. And he was going to actually go to foreclosure. We came in and we, you know, had a conversation with him, worked down a deal, and we were able to buy that property on seller financing. And what we did is we turned it into a short-term rental. So the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance were $1,250. And I rent it out for over $4,000 a month right now. And it can rent for $6,000 to $8,000 during season out here in Arizona. So, you know, in that instance, I really don't care about equity. I'm more concerned about cash flow. You know, so being able to structure a deal and learning that there's multiple different strategies is a big thing, but that comes down to knowing how to get them financed, right? Understanding that realm of it.
That's the biggest thing you would look for and want to get in line is knowing how to finance them correctly. Yeah. When you say the short-term rentals, now is that like you're doing stuff with Airbnb, or is that more just you're putting it on the quote-unquote rental market and then just having people rent it in a traditional fashion?
So that's more like Airbnb. So a lot of people call that strategy Airbnb. Airbnb is actually a company,
right?
But in the short-term rental market. So short-term rentals is a day, you know, think of it a day to, you know, a couple months. And the best way I can explain this is, before I explain it, there's a couple ways to get into the short-term rental market is you can have your own home. Right. There's people that rent out rooms in their own home. You can buy a home. You can rent that out. Or what a lot of people are doing, it's very popular right now, is people are buying. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. People are leasing apartments on 1 to 2 year leases. And then they're subleasing it through systems like Airbnb, VRBO, HomeAway, different platforms like that. And I look at that. The best way I can explain that is like, imagine you go to Costco and you buy a case of pop for $5 and then you sell each can for a dollar. That's the same thing with that strategy is we have people in our group that are controlling, they're not buying, they're controlling these properties for first month's rent, last month's rent, and then whatever it takes to furnish it. So it's, you know, we have people $4,000 to $6,000 can get into their first short-term rental. And, you know, from a risk standpoint, it's awesome. Because there's hardly any risk. Because if it doesn't work out, we teach them how to put it in the lease that they, you know, they can rent it long term. Or if something happens in the short term rental market industry, like I just saw an article today there, I guess there was a shooting at a short term rental party. There was a party, so they're really cracking down on that. So if it's banned, right, you have a thing in your lease that says, hey, I can get out of my lease if this no longer is allowed. So there's a lot of ways to really mitigate that risk, again, if you know what you're doing. And it's a great way for people to get started creating cash flow. Now, it requires a little bit more time because there's a little bit more management to it if you're self-managing. But, you know, it's a great strategy.
Now, these short-term rentals and the apartments that you're talking about, where are these apartments? Like, are they in within big? I can't imagine a big apartment complex would allow something like that to go on. Are these more like smaller complexes that are, you know, privately held by like an individual or a smaller company?
Those are, you know, the mom and pops are your best bet. And I know people that are doing it in big high rises. You know, they're actually talking with the leasing offices. There's business people, the business, the companies that place business owner or business transplants. I can't think of the term right now, but they're used to the shorter term concept. So, you know, they love it because we're guaranteeing the long-term lease. They have to understand the model, and there's a couple different ways to do it. We can straight up lease it from them, or some people do profit sharing, saying, hey, you know, you got this vacant home or vacant apartment. Hey, I'll run the business aspect of it. We'll use your house and we'll split the, you know, break up the profit in a certain manner. So yeah, but your best bet is like somebody that understands it, and you got to sell them on it, because there's a lot of people don't understand the model, and they think all these people are running in and out of their house, and you know, there's you're going to have stuff that comes up, crazy stuff that comes up, and that's just part of being in the business. But if, as long as you have protocols in line to manage it, you know, again, it really mitigates a lot of the risk.
I would figure that, you know, since it's an apartment complex already, they're used to, you know, they're in charge, obviously, of the maintenance and, you know, making sure things are staying within, you know, city code and all this and that. So I would imagine after you've got the short-term renter placed, your involvement in that particular apartment or home or whatever is pretty minimal at that point.
Well, it can be. The biggest risk in the short-term rental market is your cleaners. And you got to have a good set of cleaners that can come in and understand. Now, this is my opinion and based on my experience, cleaners and a handyman. Because a lot of the times, if you got it really up and humming, is you're going to have people checking out like at 10 a.m., just like a hotel, and guests coming at 3, you know, 2 to 3 p.m. So you have a short window to get your cleaners in there, to get anything fixed that was broke, so that the new people can move in, you know, to stay as a guest. So you're really in the hospitality industry, and, you know, you got to be on point or have a good property manager. Now, a property manager inside of the short-term rental market, they're going to charge, most of them are going to charge a lot more than a traditional property manager, because there's a lot more work involved, right? They may be going over there 1 to 2 times a week, you know, cleaning and checking and mowing lawns and making sure the pool's okay. Because if they leave one thing and that next guest finds it, you know, and it's something that isn't, you know, that gives them the willies, you know, it ruins your reviews, and they want their money back, and it can really make or break you.
Yeah, that's a very good thing. I could totally see how having a good maintenance crew, good cleaning crew on standby would be vital in that situation. Yeah, I was actually went to Seattle not too long ago and stayed in an Airbnb. And, you know, the host was very communicative going into the process, especially right at the end, because we actually needed to leave our bags there to go get our rental vehicle. And he was cool with that, but he just wanted to make sure what time we were leaving, because he needed to get that cleaner in there so he could get it flipped and ready to go for the next person. So yeah, you've got to be on top of it if you want to be in that game, for sure.
Yeah, and it really goes with economies of scale. And what I mean by that is, if it's something you really want to do, your first couple are going to be tough, because you're going to be either doing it or you're going to be paying people to do it, and you're not going to be as profitable. But once you get 5, 6, 7, 10 of them up and going, that's enough to keep a full-time crew going, you know, is, you know, depending on where you're at. And, you know, I have friends that own 20, 30, 40 of them, 50 of them, and they have their full-time cleaners. They have a full-time warehouse with linens, right? Just think of the cleaning. Just think of the laundry. The laundry alone for 20 short-term rentals, if they're 2 to 3 bedrooms a piece, man, that's a lot. And, you know, so you really got to have your ducks in a row, because it's a business. And but it's a great business to be in. It generates a lot of cash, and, you know, with very little initial outlay.
Well, kind of like we were saying before with the 10 grand and where to put it, you could get into a space like that with, you say, and like invest in like 1 or 2 units and pay for the, you know, the lease for, you know, 1, 2 years, whatever it is. But again, you've got to have the knowledge to go with that.
Right.
Yeah. You can't just get in there and think, oh, I'm going to be an Airbnb guy now. I'll have 2 places, you know, I'll hire some cleaners and it'll be all good. Like, well, no, because if you mess up your paperwork, or, you know, you don't talk to the management company about certain issues or whatever, you could be out on your butt. And then where are you? You're down 10 grand or maybe even more at that point, if you've got to, you know, pay any kind of fines or fees or anything.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing with the short-term rentals is, A, you got HOAs. You can't, you know, you got to be conscious of the HOAs. You got to make sure that you're on the up and up with the landlord. If you're doing that model, it's called rental arbitrage. You got to make sure that your leases is set up that you can get out of it and limits your risk on that end. You know, on the guest standpoint, you got to make sure that your profile is set up correctly, so that if they do mess up something, you can get paid. Because if your profile isn't set up correctly and they damage something, let's say, or they do something that causes a financial impact, if it's not set up, if it doesn't say it on the platform, you may be out, right? You may be out, and that can end up being a lot of money.
You know, a nice, like say, a nice couch, living room set, whatever in there, and somebody decides to have a party or just be a jerk and take a knife to it and cut it up, then you're out. You're out a new replacement set of that, which can be, you know, 2-3 grand depending on what it is. So yeah, it's interesting. I didn't realize or didn't think about that particular part of it, that you would have to write in your, on your profile or on your terms and conditions or whatever they call it, that yeah, if you mess something up, guess what? We're charging your card on file.
Yeah, we went to the point where in one of our homes, we said, you know, because they were taking little stuff, like just little stuff. And so we just put everything in a price catalog. And we said, hey, if this is missing, you're getting billed $15. If this is missing, if our towels go missing, you're getting billed $10 a towel. And, you know, so take them. Go ahead and take them, but we're going to charge you because we have, not only do we have to buy it, but we have to take our time out of our schedule and go buy it, right? Which is, you know, the big thing. I have a friend that has one of the biggest homes in McCormick Ranch here, and he, you know, he was renting it out for $25,000 a month, and he, you know, $800 to $1,000 a night. It was a beautiful home, and he came home one day, and there was the subdivision was full of cars, and there was a bouncer in front of his house, and he goes to go in his house, and the bouncer goes, you're not on the list. and he goes, it's my house. And they were throwing a party at his house. And it was, you know, there were cigarette butts, and it was a legit party. It was a $3-4 million house, I think. And there were cigarette butts all over. And it was just, you know, you feel violated. I can't think of any other way. You feel violated when you let someone into your house like that and they don't respect the rules. So, you know, there's cameras you can set up, you know, you got to set them up on the outside. You can't have cameras on the inside, but there's a way to mitigate that through cameras and other really cool softwares and strategies.
That's an interesting note too, that you have to have your cameras, if you have them, on the outside when you're doing that. But I guess, you know, that makes sense because your invasion of privacy and all that.
Yeah. You want to give people their privacy. So,
right.
we have them at the front door on our homes. We have them at the front door and on the driveway. So that way I can see if, you know, who's coming in and out. I had one time I had my camera on and our cleaner was over there for a while. And I just kept looking. I go, what is she doing? Finally, I drove over there because I kept seeing different cars coming in and out. And she was selling drugs out of my house. I called the police. She was arrested. There was another guy there that was arrested. And, you know, there was three or four people that came to my house and bought drugs from her because I had it on camera. And, you know, so that's the industry we're in.
You have to find good people to associate yourself with. And as soon as they violate that, boy, you're out, gone.
Right. Right.
Oh man. Well, that is some horror stories for you right there.
I could scare people with horror stories, but here's the thing. Yeah. It's part of the industry. And if you do everything right, and there, you're always going to run into problems, always, right? And that's, you just got to be adaptable. And that's the great thing about working with a local group of people in your market is, you know, we have over 300 people in our group, and there's people in there with 28 years of experience. They've seen it all, and you get to leverage them and, you know, figure out how to turn something that would lose money into something that would make money or at least break even. And it, you know, it really just helps. And a lot of it is if you set it up correctly, you're really going to limit a lot of that stuff happening.
You know, just going back to the whole camera thing, people tend to act differently when they know they're on camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So how can someone find you? Like say they're living in Phoenix in the Valley and they're interested in at least getting started or getting some exposure to the group. Like how would somebody get in touch with you or start that process?
Yeah, I would say go to my website. That's the best thing is www.valleyinvestmentclub.com. You know, we have a pretty big web presence out there. They can also call me, you know, be mindful that this is my personal cell phone number, but you know, I love talking directly with the people. You know, my cell is 219-508-6725. Just shoot me a text and, you know, I'll invite you down to a meeting. Come check us out. Come get to know us and see if it's a good fit for you.
Very cool. So this is usually the part of the podcast where I kind of just open the floor to you, my guest. And if there's anything interesting, like trend wise that you see happening or like anything you've got on your mind or exciting developments coming up, this is the time to let everybody know. So anything like that, I'll just give you the floor and let you have it.
Yeah. I mean, man, I could go for hours. You know, here's what we're seeing is there's a movement of people, that are not going to college. Like college, when I was steered to, you know, go to school, go get a job, and our economy's changing, you know, less people, more and more people are wanting to be entrepreneurs. More and more people are wanting to start their own businesses, online businesses, whatever. And it is such a wonderful life. And I remember when I was working 60 to 100 hours a week, and I just, man, I wanted to be here so bad. And, you know, and it took me. I wanted it when I was 18. I didn't quit my job till I was in my late 20s. And, you know, that's over 10 years. And what I want people to know is there's a faster way than that. And success leaves clues. So go and find someone that is actually doing what you want to do and take their advice. And most of the time I'm going to tell you, it's going to involve spending some money on a mentorship or an education. Cause that's the fastest way there, because the people that have something of value know it, right? The people that have something of value know it, and they're not just going to give it away. So, you know, I'll tell people, you know, our program on the high end is 20 grand, but it's for a lifetime and it's for two people. And I tell people, I say, I wish I charged more because I know I could, I know I could get it. But, you know, for the people that actually that show up and follow the system, it's one deal. and then they have us for the rest of their life. So, you know, I just quit trying to do it on your own. I spent 6 years, 7 years trying to do it on my own. And so if you're listening, go find people that are actually doing it. Check them out. Like I said, leave your credit cards at home, leave your wallet at home, go get a feel for who they are, their character, their integrity. And once you feel comfortable, join the program, right? Spend some money, get an education, and show up. It took me a year and a half to do my first deal. But if I would have quit, I wouldn't be where I'm at today, right? And whenever I think about it being hard, or, you know, because there's days that's you're just like, you want to throw it in the towel. I think about what the alternative is. And the alternative is going back working for someone else. And that just really lights a fire under my butt to go, you know, keep going.
Zach Ullman, Valley Investment Club, Renatus member, I appreciate your time. This was a great talk.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Stay in touch, and anything that comes down the pipeline, if you've got, you know, more exciting developments or just want to be on again, anytime, I'm happy to have you.
For sure. I appreciate you, Brian. Have a great day.
All right, you as well, brother. Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.